USCIS online portal. Oftentimes, even if they move around, right, the IRS will have the most recent data on how to locate them. And that is why this system is could be incredibly powerful if it plays out the way that we expect it to.
And in the last seconds we have, playing around with voter rolls?
Yes. That was something that I was able to find in my reporting at IRS. It sounds as if, from the sources who spoke to me, that they were able to download voting data from countries and from states, including Pennsylvania and Florida. Antonio Gracias, who is a close friend to Elon Musk, is running that operation at SSA. And even in a recent podcast, he said that they were able to, cross-reference data within SSA and voting record data across, the country in order to identify folks who may have voted illegally. Now, we don't really have a lot of information from what they found because I doubt they found much. But this is the kinds of ways that they're using our data.
Well, McKenna Kelly, there's so much to talk about. I want to thank you for doing this work as senior writer at Wired. We'll link to your recent articles on Doge, Palantir, and Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, and others. That does it for our show. We're hiring senior headline news producer, a director of audience, and a director of technology, all full-time jobs. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, community members want to stop a camp sweep at Thousand Acres Park on the Sandy River Delta as the number of people living outside continues to rise. Large Navy ships will once again fill Portland's waterways for Fleet Week. And in international news, the Trump administration is still trying to ban students from overseas sites. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Josh Salem. It's that time again. Portland's waterways will again be full of large Navy ships for Fleet Week. Visiting ships from the U.S. Navy, U.S. Coast Guard, and Royal Canadian Navy have been docking in downtown Portland for Fleet Week for some 80 years. It's one of the hallmarks of the Portland Rose Festival, as the large ships visit us in the Willamette River for multiple days. But all those large ships arriving and leaving do create delays for the thousands of commuters using Portland's bridges and the people operating them. To help cope, Fleet Week is the one time of year that some of the bridges are staffed 24 hours per day. Operators are trying to do openings and presumably closings as quickly and efficiently as possible. The Broadway, Steel, and Burnside bridges will be the most impacted by lifts. It takes 15 minutes just to open the Broadway bridge for oncoming ships. The vast number of visiting vehicles also means Portland bridges will be raised for long periods of time. For example, tomorrow four ships will arrive between 4 and 8 p.m., with lifts lasting up to 45 minutes. The steel bridge will also be closed to cyclists and pedestrians today and tomorrow until the last ship arrives for the day. All of the ships are scheduled to leave Monday, June 9th, and operators anticipate frequent bridge lifts throughout that day. The city advises people should consider commuting on the Hawthorne and Morrison bridges, if possible, to avoid long delays. As an upside, U.S. naval ships will be available to tour from June 5th to 8th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Anyone wanting to tour one of the U.S. Navy ships must have a real ID or passport because they're considered federal facilities. In fact, Rose Festival officials say the ships will have an airport-style security screening checkpoint. A full list of visiting ships can be found on the Rose Festival website. Indivisible is organizing to stand in solidarity with the Hands Off Veterans event in Washington, D.C. this Friday. KABU reporter Hannah Francis speaks with Eileen Frommer from Indivisible about the event.
Hundreds of thousands of federal workers, many of whom are veterans and military family members, are being fired or laid off from federal jobs. Their health care and benefits are being gutted. This Friday, June 6th, Federal Unionist Network and Veterans for Peace will be joining Southwest Indivisible Resistance in solidarity with America's veterans to stand up for their jobs. They aim to hold politicians accountable for policies that harm veterans and their families. I have here with me Eileen Frommer from Southwest Indivisible Resistance. Hi, Eileen. Thanks for being here with me.
Hi, Hannah. You're welcome.
Can you tell me about what you expect from the event?
Mainly, you know, we're partnering with the VA, who are having this huge demonstration at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. this Friday, called Unite for Veterans, Unite for America. So they're having a big rally in D.C., and we wanted to support that because of the government planning on gutting VA health care. So from 3 to 4, we will be at Veterans Hospital Road, which intersects at Terwilliger Boulevard. And the reason we're there from 3 to 4 is because they have a shift change around 3:15 and 3:30, and so there's a lot of traffic coming down. So that's this Friday from 3 to 4, and people can get directions and more information on Mobilize Us. And if you put in June 6th, our event will come right up, and we'd love to see lots of people there.
What are the specific goals coming from this action?
Well, the goal is to create awareness of what the government is doing to the VA. They have already eliminated 1,000 jobs, and those were the probationary workers. And they now are planning on getting 85,000 more workers from the VA. And last year, in 2024, the VA said it was working hard to fill 66,000 vacancies in order to improve the health care for the more than 9 million veterans that it serves now. So now, not only having 66,000 vacancies, they are facing the loss of 83,000 jobs that may contribute to fundamental changes in VA health care. Specifically, the VA is thinking that they're going to privatize the VA, so pay for veterans to seek medical care outside the VA system, kind of what they have been talking about with the post office and Social Security. That's one of the, you know, one of the issues that we'll be addressing.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
You know, other than slashing employment by over 17% at the VA that provides health care for millions of veterans, it is also going to de-staff the suicide hotline. And so those people will lose their jobs. And over a quarter of the employees at the VA are veterans themselves. And you can be sure that out of the 83,000 jobs that will be lost, some of them will be veterans at the VA who are going to lose their jobs. And it's also getting, as they do in so many places like universities, all the research work that the VA does, including they have come up with, you know, the most widely used method to measure and treat prostate cancer. So they do a lot in addition to directly helping the veterans. And, of course, the administration wants to stop that.
That was Eileen Frommer with Indivisible. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis.
New data show rates of homelessness continue to skyrocket, up 13% across Oregon last year alone. Meanwhile, houseless advocates speak out against a pending sweep. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
With rates of homelessness on the rise, advocates are decrying plans to remove a long-standing camp from the Sandy River Delta, also known as Thousand Acres. The Department of State Lands is planning to remove the encampment this week, along with its residents, some of whom have been there for decades. In response, residents have filed an injunction. One Joint Offices of Homeless Services outreach worker, who would prefer to stay anonymous fearing backlash, has been working with the 30-some residents of Thousand Acres for the past year. They say DSL has failed to connect residents to their promised resources, and the people living there have nowhere else to go.
They can offer you a bed in an overcrowded, low-quality shelter, or they can offer you to get on a housing wait list that will last for years. It's really not a legitimate option at all.
DSL says the camp is making the area unsafe and they need to close it temporarily to restore the land. New data shows Oregon saw a 13% increase in people experiencing homelessness in 2024 alone. Residents of Thousand Acres have created a cooperative stewardship proposal, which they're providing as an alternative to eviction from the site. Musician Tyrell Graham has lived at the park for more than 3 years.
People have been peaceful down here. Been peaceful for a long time, and this is like a sanctuary.
Advocates for the unhoused say the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office has been leaving people at Thousand Acres when they have no other options, including after their release from Multnomah County Jail. The outreach worker says evicting people who have nowhere else to go is inhumane.
People aren't trash. You can't just pick them up and throw them away. They've created a home there, and they've lived there for decades, and you can't just disrupt that on a whim.
The number of people experiencing homelessness once again set a new record last year, nearing 775,000 nationwide. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The White House blames the Biden administration for the anti-Semitic attack in Colorado. The U.S. Department of Transportation freezes EV charging station funds pending a review. And the GOP budget plan could roll back clean energy investments. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
To all Jewish Americans across our great country, this president has your back, and he's not going to allow anyone to take part in violent acts of terrorism in our country.
Condemning an anti-Semitic terror attack in Colorado, White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt also blames the Biden administration for allowing it to happen. Suspect Mohammed Sabri Soleiman is an Egyptian national in the U.S. on an expired visa. He was shouting Free Palestine at a group of pro-Israeli protesters while using a makeshift flamethrower. This comes not long after two Israeli embassy staffers were killed outside a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. The Anti-Defamation League says anti-Semitic incidents have more than doubled in the past year. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser.
I believe strongly, and I have said often, it is not up to the Jewish community to say support us. It is up to all of us to denounce anti-Semitism in all forms.
Some feel the Trump administration's zealous approach to investigating anti-Semitism is leading to an increase in free speech crackdowns on college campuses. One recent report found nearly two-thirds of controversies about speech have resulted in students being punished, a dramatic increase. The federal government is also revoking the visas of international students engaging in pro-Palestinian activism. This comes as Israel just fired on Palestinians waiting for food and other aid at U.S.-backed emergency sites, killing more than 30. Clean energy advocates are sounding the alarm on President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. They say it would endanger clean energy investments in states like Colorado, which have seen more than $500 million in investment from the Inflation Reduction Act. Garrett Royer with Sierra Club in Colorado says those clean energy projects have created nearly 4,000 jobs, while fast-tracking oil and gas development would raise costs for working families.
The best way that we achieve global energy dominance, if that's truly what the goal of the Trump administration is, would be to invest in as many energy solutions as possible, rather than only advocating for the most expensive forms of energy.
Nonprofits in 16 states are suing the administration for freezing $5 billion in funds already allocated to build out electric vehicle charging stations. The White House wants to undo a Biden-era plan to put charging stations every 50 miles on major corridors across the country. According to the American Lung Association, a large-scale transition to EVs could save more than $1 trillion in health costs and avoid more than 100,000 deaths. The U.S. Department of Transportation is also freezing and reviewing millions in other grant dollars. Powell County, Montana was set to receive more than $6 million for its Parks to Passes project. That public-private collaboration aims to close gaps in a pedestrian and biking corridor spanning roughly 230 miles between Butte and the Idaho border. Kevin Mills with the Rails to Trails Conservancy says they want it as part of the Great American Rail Trail route, stretching from Washington, D.C. to Washington State.
It's really stalling an important connection in that nationwide trail. And then that puts at risk Montana's potential to tap into what we've calculated to be $16 million in new economic development.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the House Tax and Budget Package with Representative Andrea Salinas. At 6, it's Trans-Positive PDX. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will show a high of 76 right about now and a low of 56 later tonight. Tomorrow will be rainy with a high of 69 and a low of 54. Today in 1989, the pro-democracy protest in Tiananmen Square was crushed by the Chinese military. There were more than 100,000 people in the protest, and the military interference resulted in hundreds of deaths. The quote of the day is from Abraham Maslow, a psychologist who died in 1970. He said, "You will either step forward into growth or back into safety." The Coquille Indian Tribe and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs recently signed an agreement. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Coquille Indian Tribe and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs recently signed a formal agreement. The agreement creates a framework for collaboration and to increase resources to support Native veterans in accessing federal and state veterans benefits. According to a press release, the Memorandum of Understanding paves the way for the establishment of the tribe's first Tribal Veteran Service Officer, which will jointly be funded by the tribe and state agency. The service officers help veterans and their families in accessing benefits. They're trained by the State Veterans Affairs Department and accredited by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. This is the fifth such agreement. The others are with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, and the Crow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians. There are 9 federally recognized tribes in the state. Last week, California Assembly lawmakers approved a bill to grant military retirees and their dependents up to $20,000 as a state tax exemption. The bill was introduced by Native American Assembly member James Ramos. In a statement, he said the bill is intended to acknowledge the many sacrifices of military retirees and their families and serve as an incentive to keep them in California. California does not offer tax exemption on military pensions. Advocates of the bill say if a tax exemption were in place, gains for the state would include more jobs and an economic boost. The bill is supported by a number of veterans organizations across the state. The measure heads to the Senate. Native experts in foraging for traditional foods are sharing some of their recommendations. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
In Papago Park, east of Phoenix, Twyla Cassador points to the base of a Palo Verde tree where small branches, dried leaves, and other plant matter have formed the ground nest of a desert wood rat. Cassador says the rodent is both a source of nutrition and knowledge.
And many of us may not think much about the desert wood rat, but as people that study environmental science or engineering, this friend of ours, also a delicious friend, will tell us about climate change.
Cassador is a traditional food forager and educator with the San Carlos Apache tribe. She explains to a tour organized by the Society of Environmental Journalists that other researchers have found that as the planet warms, the wood rat uses larger plant material to shade or insulate its home. But where the rat is plentiful, as it is here in the Sonoran Desert, it can also be a source of what Cassador calls pre-reservation food, food from before the years when the U.S. government forced native people away from their longtime homes.
They took everyone away from the landscape where they originally foraged from and hunted from.
Helping Cassador with the effort to discover more traditional foods is Jeffrey Lazos Ferns, a naturalist and member of the Pascua Yaqui tribe. He points to blossoms and seeds on the Palo Verde tree.
These flowers, you can make tea out of them. Also, the pods, which you maybe see on some of the more younger trees out here, they taste like edamame, so you can eat them fresh off the tree, or you can peel them, boil them, put salt on them, or store them for the season that you actually do want to use them.
Lazos Fern says some larger cities like Tucson have started to plant more indigenous plants that need less water or no fertilizer and be a source of food or medicine. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
As flood risks rise, Latino landscapers and residents learn to fight back with green infrastructure. A DC-based nonprofit trains people in stormwater management techniques to build healthier, flood-resilient neighborhoods. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on those stories with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As climate change brings more intense rain to many parts of the country, people's yards and gardens provide an often overlooked opportunity to help reduce the risk of flooding. So to educate more people about so-called green infrastructure techniques, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit called EcoLatinos created a Spanish-language training program for Latino landscapers and local residents.
I wanted to learn more on how to make a difference, especially in my own community.
Fredemir Abel participated in the program last fall. He says he gained hands-on experience and techniques for managing stormwater. For example, he learned to build rain gardens, sunken areas planted with deep-rooted perennials that help absorb stormwater. Participants also learned about tree planting, minimizing non-permeable surfaces, and how to install rain barrels. And they got tips for starting or expanding sustainable landscaping businesses.
So what I would like to do is to apply these skills to support green jobs and help design healthier and more sustainable neighborhoods.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
June is Pride Month, and transgender advocates are speaking about equality in the workplace in light of the dismissal of transgender people in the military. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
June is Pride Month, and transgender advocates are speaking out, seeking equal recognition in society and in the workplace. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled that President Donald Trump can enforce a ban on transgender people in the military while litigation proceeds. Martha Gomez with the nonprofit Trans Can Work says the attacks on transgender people ultimately hurt society as a whole.
Of course, transgender are at the forefront of a lot of those attacks, but the truth is that these DEI cuts, they hurt all of us as a nation to not have opinions outside of just one.
The armed forces are also changing the names of transgender members of the military back to their names at birth. Trans Can Work encourages all employers to consider the harm of deadnaming people and to make sure healthcare policy and legal paperwork is inclusive. They offer job training and reentry services in order to fight higher employment rates among transgender groups, which range from 9 to 16%, much higher than the national rate of 4.2%. Gomez would like employers to make sure employee compensation is fair and based entirely on a job well done without regard to gender identity.
Compared to a white cis man, gay or lesbian women tend to make about 89 cents of that dollar. Transgender people make about 69 cents and Black transgender women only make 43 cents of that dollar.
Transgender, gender diverse, and intersex individuals continue to face high rates of economic insecurity, job discrimination, and barriers to stable employment. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio has vowed to aggressively revoke the visas of Chinese students, continuing the administration's decoupling of relations with Beijing in all manner of exchanges. As one U.S. university president says, we are shooting ourselves in the foot by denying Chinese students and researchers the opportunity to be here. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Prior to the first Trump administration, U.S.-China collaboration was all the rage in Washington and Beijing. Whether the subject was medical research, economic and social research, or physics, exchanges between U.S. and Chinese academic institutions, commercial entities, and even military and legislative bodies were almost universally encouraged. Colleges and universities in both countries jumped at the opportunity to establish joint programs and robust student and teacher exchanges. The COVID pandemic marked the high tide of educational exchanges. Trump ended the Fulbright program and pulled support from scientific and other exchanges. Presidents Biden and Xi both took steps to revive them. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, during an April 2023 trip to China, talked to American students there on how critical study in China is for cross-cultural understanding and prevention of misperceptions between governments. Xi proposed that 50,000 U.S. students visit China over a five-year period. But the positive rhetoric was overtaken by politics before Biden's term ended. Now the Trump administration has put the kibosh on all manner of exchanges except, interestingly enough, the U.S.-China Science Cooperation Agreement that was first signed in 1979. Even before Secretary of State Marco Rubio's announcement the other day that the U.S. will, quote, aggressively revoke the visas of certain Chinese students in the U.S., educational and other exchanges with China were in peril. Under Trump, funding for flagship Chinese language programs at the U of O, the University of Washington, and other universities were terminated. Schools that hosted Chinese-funded Confucius Institute classrooms in language and culture were forced to end them by threats to eliminate U.S. funds to those schools. Several U.S. universities with joint programs in China, such as UC Berkeley, were forced by the Defense Department to terminate them. A Chinese foreign ministry official said, with some justice, quote, the U.S. side keeps overstretching the concept of national security and has arbitrarily canceled Chinese students' visas, forbidden their entry, and forcibly repatriated them without any conclusive evidence. The inspection rooms at some U.S. airports have become a nightmare for Chinese students. What the U.S. side is doing contradicts its statement about facilitating and supporting people-to-people exchanges between the two countries, unquote. Last year, officials emphasized the lack of safety for travelers in each other's country. The latest U.S. policy announced by Rubio seeks to identify and deport Chinese students who have ties to the Chinese Communist Party or work in critical fields, such as advanced technologies. The policy comes on the heels of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem's warning to Harvard and all other universities that the administration will hold Harvard accountable for fostering violence, anti-Semitism, and coordinating with the Chinese Communist Party on its campus. That's a quote. How the administration will determine which students have ties to the CCP or are coordinating with it is unclear. At present, there are about 275,000 Chinese students and researchers in the U.S. By the way, that compares with fewer than 1,000 American students in China. Chinese students account for roughly 20% of visas granted to international students. The Trump administration is relying on national security to justify the dismantling of exchange programs with China. But that is a thin argument indeed. It is based on the assumption, rarely evidence, that exchanges with China will inevitably lead to Chinese theft of technology and weapons designs. The actual aim is political. decouple from China, and contain its influence. That is the link between exchanges and trade. In neither case is Trump interested in negotiations for mutual benefit. He wants to win over the Chinese with threats. But it's not working. Trade talks have stalled. The 90-day pause on a mutual lowering of tariffs looks likely to end without agreement. And both countries have imposed new trade restrictions. U.S.-China educational exchanges, like trade, are a net positive. Chinese visitors upgrade the quality of a student body by their diligence. They contribute importantly to research. They earn patents for the university, and they pay full tuition. I think it is terribly misguided, counterproductive, and another way in which we are shooting ourselves in the foot, said Michael Roth, president of Wesleyan University. Many university leaders have said the same. Beyond those contributions, Chinese students and all other international students, especially those from countries with human rights issues, may absorb liberal values that may one day prove critical to their country's political futures. By denying Chinese the opportunity to study here and pushing a tariff war, the U.S. is feeding the Chinese view of America, its double standards, racism, and unreliability. And that view has gained significant currency around Asia and beyond. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem, Lexis Ponce, and Mel Grutov. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th.